The Fan on Demand. From the skills of killer Canadian Milos Raonic to the spacesuit outfits of Serena Williams, this is Total Tennis Coverage. This is Aces on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
And good evening, everybody. I'm Roger Lajoie. Tom Tebbit, Tennis Canada, is with me. This is Aces on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Coming up on the program later, Todd Woodbridge, Mary Carrillo, and your emails and questions for Tom Tebbit. Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Before we jump into the show, those listening in Toronto tonight, we are experiencing some really severe thunderstorms and rain, so be careful out there. Our updates will give you everything you need to know throughout the course of the night as well. And stay safe out there. A lot of road closures, but it looks like the rain is at least abating a bit, and it should be okay in the next little while. But for now, be careful when you're out there in Toronto. We're nice and warm here in studio in Toronto, and Tom Tebbit is back from London. Tom, how did this Wimbledon compare to some of the other ones you've seen? And what did you think? Murray, that's got to be a special event, you saw.
Well, certainly a special event, him winning after 77 years. They've been waiting so long.
Were you at the original when Fred Perry? Oh, no.
I think I interviewed Fred Perry sometime a long time ago. Yeah, I remember him talking. Jimmy Connors said to him once when he was playing, if I win next year, I'm going to have three in a row. But then he lost that one, so he didn't even get to two. So yeah. And he joked that Fred Perry said, no, kid, you won't do that. So, but he was a great guy. Actually, he was a very, very good ping pong player, believe it or not.
Wow. Yeah. Interesting man. So a tremendous accomplishment for him. Woman's side was crazy this year, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, who would have thought anybody but Serena would win? And, of course, she didn't win. Neither did Sharapova, neither Azarenka, neither Radwanska, neither Kvitova. How the heck Marion Bartoli won, I don't know. But she really deserved it because she played well the last couple of rounds. She's always been a very, very hard worker. So, in a sense, a deserving champion, if an unlikely one.
Okay, so we got a busy show today. We'll talk a little bit more about Wimbledon later. Again, Roger at sportsnet59.ca. Any questions you have for Tom, Roger at sportsnet59.ca. You can follow me on Twitter at TheRog590 and drop a comment too at TheRog590. Tom's on Twitter as well at Tom Tebbit. So drop us a line anytime during the show. Let's get going with Todd Woodbridge. Tell us about this guy.
Well, he was a very good singles player. Made the semifinals at Wimbledon, made the final of our tournament here in Toronto. But basically known as a doubles player, of course, one half of the Woodies with Mark Woodford, and a terrific doubles player, really. Maybe better than Daniel Nestor, so that's saying a lot.
Ooh, that is saying a lot. He was a great one. Here's Tom's conversation with Todd Woodbridge.
Todd Woodbridge, welcome to Aces.
Thanks, Tom. Nice to be with you.
You won two singles titles, 83 doubles title, ranked as high as 19 in singles, and as high as, obviously, number one in doubles. How did you balance playing doubles and singles?
Look, I came through an era just after the greats of Australian tennis when it was considered the norm that you played everything. So I never even questioned whether or not I should go into a Grand Slam and be playing two or three events. And I suppose I had one Wimbledon where I had a great singles result reaching the semis, and I played 11 matches in 7 days that week because of a lot of rain in the first week, and it was just what we did. And in some ways, my thought process through that was that if I entered into tournaments and I had a bad singles week, I'd much rather be playing competitive doubles matches, working on my game there, than being out in the practice court for hours.
What's Todd Woodbridge up to these days?
Several things. I feel actually like I'm busier now than I was as a player, just not in the physical capacity. I work for Tennis Australia as head of professional tennis. That oversees the Davis Cup and Fed Cup. So I look after the men and women at the elite side of the game. It also takes through the transition of our very best juniors from Grand Slam juniors through to what they need to do to become a top 100 player. So I work through the strategies of our junior development, and then a lot of the staffing on trying to get the right coaches for the right individual athlete as they get on the tour.
Let's talk doubles, obviously. You were very successful in doubles. What was it that made you and Mark Woodford such a good team?
We had wonderful communication, both on and off the court. We both were driven individuals and wanted to succeed individually and as well as a partnership. We knew that what we did was a great business, so we continued to try to improve ourselves all the time. And I think the most important key to our success in the partnership was the ability on an individual day that we both could lead. So if Mark wasn't playing very well, I could step up to the plate and be the director of what was going on. And on other days when I was, you know, a bit frayed around the edges, Mark would be the leader. And I think a lot of people didn't recognise that that was the strength of our partnership until we'd actually finished.
My image of you while you were a terrific all-round player in doubles is that you were really, really efficient at the net. If there was any ball anywhere high above the net, you just got rid of it really quickly. Am I right in sort of remembering in my mind's eye how good you were at dispatching balls around the net?
Yes. I think for me it was always the priority that if a ball was above the net, it should be either put away or it should be put into a position where the next one was there to be put away and the point was yours. And I think that was taught to us coming from Australia, from a group of great volleyers that, you know, we came after. Being in Davis Cup training weeks and you had Neil Fraser feeding you balls and you did two-on-one drills all day long and you just learnt that side of the game. And even now, that's still what I love to do, is to get in there and finish stuff off. So not quite as sharp and around the net as it used to be.
Canada obviously has had a premier doubles player for a long time in Daniel Nestor. What impresses you? What do you think of when you think of Daniel Nestor?
Well, longevity is one key. It's very hard in this game to be as good as he's been for so long. And I think with Dan, it's that ability to have continued on with different people and continue to win. That's hard to do. You know, a lot of people didn't expect that I would walk out of one partnership and into another very successful one with Jonas Bjorkman. And you've got to have the strengths of leadership and commitment to be able to do that. And, you know, Dan has done that. And I think also Dan, his games continue to improve. When he was younger, there were certain parts of the returning game that weren't strong. He got those better. Always had a wonderful serve. And I think around the net too, he actually got to a point where he started to volley better and crisper and put more balls away. Early and mid, he used to make volleys, but they weren't crisp. In the latter part of his career, that certainly improved.
I don't like to bring back a bad memory, but the 2000 Olympics, Sebastian Leroux and Daniel beat you and Mark in the gold medal match. That must have been a huge disappointment. Was there a lot of pressure? I think that was your last tournament or last year. Was a lot of pressure on you playing that event?
There was a lot of pressure, but it wasn't one that we felt we couldn't handle. It was our very last tournament together. And in hindsight, I wish we could go back and have said, this is our last year. But we were finishing at the Olympics. And I think the hardest part about the final that day, which in the end were outplayed, and I think Dan played one of the best tournaments of his career, singles and doubles, that particular event. He beat Pat Rafter along the way in singles as well. But if I could have gone back, or could go back, I would have said that we would have not have told the world that we were going to retire at that point, because the last day, the finals day, there were a lot of other emotions to deal with other than just an Olympic final. It was the last warm-up, the last match together. It had a real feeling of an end, and I know personally I felt like I used a lot of energy before even getting to the court in trying to deal with that.
Back to Australian tennis, what's the current state of the game in Australia?
Well, I think we are starting to do really well again. As a nation, your goal is to try to get a large pool of players, as many as you can, as a benchmark for us is in the top 100, and then from there you'll get somebody that will step out of the pack and lead. We're about 7 years into redeveloping our programs, and we're now starting to see a bit of a conveyor belt of young players coming through our junior ranks, particularly on the boys' side of things. We've got a very good, solid group of young players. Two of them qualified here at Wimbledon this year. Tomic leads our pack, obviously. But we've got two other fabulous young kids in the juniors here. They didn't perform as well, but Nick Kyrgios and Tanasi Kokkinakis, they're names that you will see over the next 5 years come through. So we now have a large pool of players to draw on again. We didn't have that for a while. On the girls' side of things, after we lose Sam, we're a little sparse up until Ash Barty, who's 17, but in the women's doubles final here at Wimbledon, which is a fantastic effort. Underneath her is when we have the next few girls coming through there. So I think our development pathway is starting to turn wheels and work really well. But of course, you know, in Australia, like everywhere else, they want the champion tomorrow, and it just doesn't come that quickly.
In Canada, we have Milos Raonic. There's Grigor Dimitrov as well, and Jiří Janowicz did well at Wimbledon. You have Bernard Tomic. What potential do you see in him?
Bernard is a top 10 player, without doubt. I think the harder parts for him are the distractions. Obviously, his dad has made worldwide news, and he's got to be able to learn to mature as an individual to be able to really get the very best out of himself. This particular Wimbledon, though, he made probably, you could say, huge steps towards going to another level. I think all of the names that you just mentioned are potential Grand Slam champions in the coming 7 years. For Bernard, it's a matter of being able to become consistent, though. He can certainly shine at a major or two, but to win majors, you've got to be able to do it week in, week out to bring that form and that fitness to be able to win seven matches under a lot of pressure. We saw Andy Murray this Wimbledon have to come back from two sets of love down. He wouldn't have been able to do that 3 or 4 years ago, but here now with fitness and the mentality is able to do it. And I think all of those young players are still struggling to get the whole package together just yet. I mean, the men's game actually need one or two of them to do it quicker than they currently are.
Right. How much is having a Grand Slam tournament in your country, how much does it help you and all the other people at Tennis Australia?
Oh, it's enormous. I mean, it's obviously an opportunity to fund the sport. It's also a national focus for January of our country. It's focused on tennis. So when you want to get new kids playing the sport or talking about the sport, we have got the biggest springboard possible.
I know it's a tiresome question, but when Todd Woodbridge looks back at his career, what are the highlights? I know you won 9 Wimbledons and reached the semifinals at Wimbledon in singles, but what stands out for you most?
Well, they're obviously huge highlights. Wimbledon, for me, was the place I always dreamt about playing and doing well at. And I think the other one, for me, was the 2 Olympics, winning gold in Atlanta and then also Sydney, where we talked about the fact that the Woodies finished there and we won a silver medal. That was an extraordinary experience, both on and off the court. And I think, yeah, I'd love to have had more single successes, but I look back at my career and go, you know, well, I got every last bit out of myself that was possible, so I couldn't do more.
I see you're wearing a member's badge, a member of the All England Club. Yeah. What are the secret perks of being a member of the All England Club that maybe our listeners at home would be interested in knowing about?
Well, one of the key things is, in fact, being able to get onto grass courts prior to any other players. Now, I don't play anymore, but for 5 years while I was still playing, I could come over here and get on the grass courts 2 weeks before anybody else could. So a huge benefit to practice. And then also, if I've got a young Australian player that's wanting to do that, I can take them there now and get them on the courts and try to help them get prepared a lot earlier. In terms of being a non-player anymore, I think it's that wonderful ability to be able to come back to this tournament every year, regardless. You have your credentials, you can walk straight through the gate.
Grant Connell is a player many Canadians remember, and I know you beat him in three Grand Slam finals. He's quite a character, was a pretty good player. What are your memories of Grant Connell as a guy on the other side of the net?
He was more than a pretty good player. I mean, to make slam finals of any event, you're a damn good player. But of Grant, I just remember a hustler around the net, a guy who served and volleyed and kept coming at you and was very competitive. And, at times he wasn't in your face, but a spirited competitor that Aussies loved playing. I think Aussies have always been on court. We go at it a lot like South Africans, and Grant was in that mould. And when you get off the court, everybody gets along and has a good laugh and with each other. And he was one of the guys that I think everybody enjoyed having around on tour because he could lighten moments and have fun.
You have a young son who's started out in showbiz as an actor. Where exactly is he now, and how successful? I think he's been quite successful so far. How old is he?
Beau is just about to turn 11. He's an out-of-work actor now, like the majority of those. But he's had a fabulous 15, 18 months. He's been performing in 3 productions. He played Gustav in Love Never Dies, a sequel to Phantom of the Opera, then Michael Banks in Mary Poppins, and just finished a 6-month run of Jeremy Potts in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. So he's got a nice little bank balance going. He also sang the Australian anthem and the men's final this year at the Australian Open. And he's just had the most incredible period, and he now knows what he's going to do the rest of his life at 10 and a half, 11 years of age.
So there's no chance he'll follow his father into tennis.
You know, the one thing he said to my wife a couple of years ago, he said, "Mum, I don't want to play tennis. I don't want to go and hit balls." And my wife said, "Look, that's fine, mate. You don't have to do that." He said, "Yeah, good, because that's Dad's thing and I don't want to do Dad's thing."
Well, we're pleased to have Dad on the show tonight. Thank you very much, Todd.
Pleasure, Tom.
Nice you got a career going at age 11 with a healthy bank balance for him. Charming guy. Nice guy.
Very intelligent guy. He was a player of the president of the Players Council at one point. Most of the guys who are elected by the fellow players to be president, they got something special. They're bright guys.
Well, he's a bright guy for sure. Thanks to Todd Woodbridge for joining us. Tom will chat with Mary Carrillo when we return. Roger at sportsnet590.ca for the email. Your question for Tom tonight, Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Let's get him in here. It's Aces, and it's Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
Tennis, anyone? This is Aces with your hosts Roger Lajoie and Tom Tebbit of Tennis Canada. Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
It's Aces on Sportsnet 590, the Fan. I'm Roger Lajoie, Tom Tebbit of Tennis Canada here. As always, thanks for supporting the show, folks. We'll be back again Wednesday, 17th of this month, and then we have four shows in August as we continue our season. So thank you for following us. You can follow me on Twitter at TheRaj590. Follow Tom at Tom Tebbit on Twitter. And email the show anytime, Roger at Sportsnet590.ca. We have a Tom's Mailbag segment we do in our final segment of the show. And if you've got a question, good chance we'll read it to Tom and get his response. So participate that way. Later on, you can win Rogers Cup tickets. Get your chance at winning our grand prize of the Wilson Tennis Racket as well. We'll tell you more about that after our next update as well. You were a busy guy. You got Todd Woodbridge, and you got a pretty familiar name to tennis fans, too, we're going to hear from next.
Yeah, Mary Carrillo. I don't know how many U.S. Opens she's done with John McEnroe. She's a very famous broadcaster. Played for a little while. Actually, only played for 3 or 4 years and had a chronic knee problem. I talked to her a little bit about that. Sort of a shame that she didn't have a longer career. She grew up in Douglaston, New York, with a guy named John McEnroe.
Not a bad guy to hang with when you're growing up.
Yeah, that had something to do with the beginning of your career, as you'll hear in the interview.
Interesting indeed. So let's hear that interview right now. Tom Tebbit in conversation with Mary Carrillo.
Mary Carrillo, welcome to Aces.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here, Tom.
You've been around this game for a long time. What does it mean to you just to be still coming back to Wimbledon?
This one is just, I remember playing Wimbledon for the first time when I was only 20 years old, and it had been a dream, you know, hitting against a backboard from the time you're a little kid, you know, pretending you're at Wimbledon. And even now, I've been covering it since 1996 after I played it 3 times. And what's remarkable about this place is it's still very traditional, and it's got great roots to the past, and yet it's so progressive. And every time they do something, they do it so beautifully, and it's integrated well. And every tournament, including and especially the U.S. Open, can learn a lot from how this place preserves its class and yet stays in the forefront of this is the greatest club tennis tournament in the whole world.
Yeah, well, pretty exclusive.
Very exclusive, but very, very, very special place.
I went on the WTA website, and the only player info about you is your birthday and the fact that you made $0 so far in 2013. What were some of the career highlights, your highest ranking and stuff like that?
The only thing I ever did that seems to have been of note is that when John McEnroe was a senior in high school and taking time away from his final month in high school to play some tennis, he and I teamed up together. We had been kids together in this little town in New York called Douglaston, and we won the mixed doubles at the French Open. And it was, I often say, it was his first major and my last. So it all ended pretty much there. I mean, we continued to play. We got to the quarters here a couple of weeks later and lost 10-8 in the third to Martina Navratilova and Dennis Ralston. That was our first Wimbledon. He was a qualifier. He got himself to the semis. And our other lifelong friend, Vitas Gerulaitis, got to the semis and played a classic against Borg. And it was just I only played for a couple of years, Tom, and I really wasn't that good. And for a lefty, I didn't have a reasonable lefty serve. I mean, I was very limited, but I knew going in that my knees were terrible. I was riding on rims, you know, from the time I was in high school. So I just gave it a go and had a lot of laughs, and I've figured out a way to hang around.
Let's talk about women's tennis. How good is Serena Williams?
She's certainly among the best ever already, I think, and she can still add clearly to her legacy now. I still have a hard time putting her ahead of Martina Navratilova and Steffi Graf. Because they were so consistently great for so long. I mean, Serena went from 2003 to 2008 without even being in the top five. She missed a lot of majors for all kinds of reasons, some deeply personal and sad and painful, and some just because she was out of shape and or she was injured. But yeah, she's definitely a force of nature in the game now. I wish she had a rival. I think many of us, I'm sure you probably had it in your head that she and Venus would be deciding majors for a good 10 or 15 years, and that didn't happen. They played each other in the early 2000s a bunch of times, and then only a handful of times since. So it's hard to judge Serena against everybody else when she doesn't have a consistent contemporary rival. But she's certainly one of the greats.
And what do you make of Richard Williams somehow developing and producing two young girls from a poor area of Los Angeles and taking them to the very summit of the sport?
Look, it's one of the sport's most remarkable stories, is that these two kids came out of there, and they didn't really have formal training. I mean, it was Richard and his wife. And I think Auracine has got an awful lot to do with it. I think, in a way, she gets undervalued for what she's brought to the party, because I think both girls try hard to live up to her values and her standard, and I think they're both very powerful parents. I think the kids have tried very hard to live up to what they've been taught from the time they were little, that they belong, that they are champions, and those are great gifts to give to your kids. And so I think they've been, in those ways, I think, I'm not sure how good their coaching has been. I mean, I think in the last year when Serena's had a truly proper coach in Patrick Mouratoglou, her footwork is better, her balance is better, her strokes are cleaner, her serve is more consistent. I mean, there's part of me that wishes she'd had that kind of training all along. But the fact that she's still around and still hungry, again, that goes back to her parents.
What about Maria Sharapova? What's your take on her career, the ups and the downs? And I guess it's more or less of an up now.
I think Maria has done, I think she's a real pro. And that's about as big a compliment as I can give somebody who's that rich and famous, that they still want to be as professional as possible. She has very talented people around her who try to bring out the best in what I consider to be a fairly limited game. She's not an athlete the way Serena is, or Victoria Azarenka, or Sabina Lisicki, or Radwanska. I mean, she hasn't that skill set that those players have, but she's got an incredible will and a great desire to use what she does well. She's done an awful lot, and she continues to want to win majors at a time in her life when she's got all the money and all the fame and celebrity that she could possibly ask for. So that speaks to her will, too.
And what about the next generation of women players, the Sloane Stephenses, Madison Keys, Laura Robson, even Eugenie Bouchard from Canada?
Yeah.
How do they kind of impress you, and do you have a feel for anyone special in that group?
I've only started to watch Bouchard of late. In the last several months, I've seen her play a couple of times, and I like what I'm seeing in her. And I think she's a bright kid. She's got a nice attitude. I think she wants to be up there. She wants to be part of this whole conversation. And what I like about the people you just mentioned, and I'll throw in young Taylor Townsend, who still needs to get fit, but she's a very good young American lefty. They have big games. They you know, we've had, especially in my country, we've had Melanie Udan and, you know, Christina McHale. We've had players who are good and driven and very hungry and feisty, but they're grinders, and it's hard for them to really break through. And Madison Keys and Sloane and, you know, those kind of players, Bouchard, they've got big games. They've got real weaponry, and they seem willing to use it. So I think I'm encouraged by what's going on in women's tennis now.
Mary, a lot of people respect you because you're not afraid to say what you think, even if it might not be politically correct or the safest thing to do.
Yeah, I've heard that.
What's been the toughest stance you took over your career, and the thing that was the hardest to do?
I mean, over the years, I've been in every kind of penalty box. I've been in Andre Agassi's. I've been in Maria Sharapova's. I've certainly been in Serena's, in and out for years. But it's my feeling is, especially because I was not a world beater, I mean, I'm getting hired because I've got a certain amount of background and opinions, and I don't think they're half-baked. I think they're fairly well-considered and cogent most of the time. And my attitude is, that's why I'm here. That's why I'm getting paid, is to say what I see. And it's been hard at times. There have been players who haven't wanted to talk to me, or they have, but their parents won't let them, or their agent, or their girlfriend, or their boyfriend, or their pet dog, or whatever it is. I mean, but my feeling is that if I stay consistent, you know, if I call it like I see it, and I stay that course, that over time, players will know that I'm trying to get it right, and I'm trying to be fair and honest, and more often than not, that's helped me out.
People are very fickle about their broadcasters. I don't think you'll ever find any broadcaster that achieves unanimity amongst people who watch tennis on TV. John McEnroe, Bud Collins, yourself, there's always going to be the critics. How do you deal with the critics, or how does it affect you?
I know there are plenty of people who either like you or don't like you, and I certainly know that about myself. Again, there's a handful of people I truly respect and listen to. And then there aren't many, but I know when I first started to broadcast, I always had in my head, I was talking to my coach, the late, great Harry Hotman. I wanted Mr. Hotman to know that I'd listened hard and well, and that I appreciated and cared about the sport. I seemed to be speaking to Mr. Hotman. And then that changed, you know. Then as you get on with it, and you know, I think in the beginning a lot of players are afraid to criticize other players. I never really worried about that. I don't mind going against. I work with John McEnroe a lot, and we don't always disagree, and I feel comfortable disagreeing with him on the air. If you listen to everybody in the Twitter sphere or something, you'll drive yourself nuts. So I really don't pay any attention to that. I've been asked by a couple of my networks to join social media, and I keep threatening to start an anti-social media. I really think I'd be good at that. because I think you have to stay true to yourself, and you have to give voice to what you really believe in. So I try not to let it bug me.
Mary Carolus obviously has opinions about tennis. What are your pet peeves? What are the things you'd like to see changed in tennis?
Well, in terms of women's tennis, I really do feel that the grunting has got to stop. I'm so happy that the women's final here at Wimbledon will feature two women who hit the ball really hard and don't have to express it vocally. It really bothers me, and I argue with the WTA all the time because I don't feel like that they're doing enough about it. You know, they're basically letting everyone who grunts now to grunt through the rest of their careers, and they say that they're trying to get younger kids not to do it, but I don't think that's enough. I also don't like on-court coaching. I think it's infantilizing and sexist that women are allowed to get coached on the court. I mean, they can problem solve. They can figure out their own issues. And a lot of times it's their mother or their father who come out on the court. More often than not, it's a man, which I think looks really bad for our sport. So that kind of stuff really bugs me. I mean, I've got a lot of issues. I think Hawkeye technology is terrific. I don't like the challenge system because ultimately it means that the player has to call their own shots. They're calling their own, you know, you've got this great technology, and there are times, and we've seen it here at Wimbledon already a couple of times, where a ball, you know, could have decided a set or a game, and it doesn't get challenged. And, you know, so there are things that bug me. But in the main, though, I'm pretty happy with the way the sport is going. I do get aggravated sometimes. I think I don't like phony timeouts, injury timeouts. They drive me nuts. I think there's a lot of gamesmanship and brinksmanship that happens in the politics of tennis too, which also aggravates me. But you know, it's still a fairly, as a sport goes, it's a fairly healthy mess of a sport, I'd say.
This is a bit of a tricky question, Mary, but over your career, who would be the most impressive person you've met in the game?
In the game, I'm going to have to go back into the files and say Billie Jean King. I mean, obviously, she has done more to change my world. I feel like she's given me my whole career. I mean, first I wanted to be like her as a tennis player, and then I wanted to be like her as an activist, and my broadcasting career wouldn't have happened unless someone like Billie said women can do the same things that men can do, and women deserve equal money. I would absolutely go back to Billie, and I still do. I mean, I had dinner with her last night, and I came home energized and gratified that I knew her. So, yeah, she's still the gold standard in this sport.
Mary, it's been great to have you on the show.
Anytime,
thank you very much.
Anytime, Tom. Pleasure.
Pleasure listening, Tom. She has so many interesting things to say about just about every topic. Every question you ask her has a great answer. Love that.
She's a very intelligent woman, and she's very diversified, too. Somebody told me before I interviewed her, said, ask her about the Winter Olympics. She loves covering the Winter Olympics. I think she's covered four or five. She's covered, I think, six Summer Olympics. So she's pretty well done it all from a very sort of simple, humble start in tennis.
Had a tremendous career for sure. Thanks to Mary for being on the program. This segment of Aces brought to you by National Bank. At National Bank, we know that you can't win without strong service. That's why we're proud to sponsor the 2013 Rogers Cup. Visit nbctennis.ca for details. That's nbctennis.ca for more details. Tom's mailbag's coming up. Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Drop an email. You'll hear the answer to your question for Tom coming up next, and your chance to win Rogers Cup tickets are on the way. Roger Lajoie, Tom Tebbit. It's Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. Tennis, anyone?
This is Milos Raonic, and you're listening to Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Thank you, Milos, and it is Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Roger Lajoie, Tom Tebbit. Here's the agenda for the top of the hour, folks. We are going to give away Rogers Cup tickets in about 7-8 minutes' time with our mystery sounder, okay? So keep the email address handy for that, Roger at sportsnet590.ca. When you hear the sounder, that's your indication. It's time for you to give your guess in, and all our correct entries will be entered for Rogers Cup tickets for the Tuesday night draw when the tournament hits Toronto here. And all our winners throughout the course of the year have a chance at that great Wilson racket there, Tom.
The Wilson Steam racket, Rogers, you well know, the ultimate in string technology.
Oh, you say that so well. You know what?
Should I say it again, Roger?
Say it one more time.
The ultimate in string technology.
It wasn't as good the second time. But at any rate, this segment is brought to you by Tennis Canada and the Rogers Cup. Serena, Maria, and the best women's tennis returns to Toronto August 3rd to 11th. Get your tickets now at RogersCup.com. Going to be some of the great women's players. I would think, hope I'm not speaking out of line, Rogers Cup might even have a little bit more of a cachet because so many of those girls were knocked out early at Wimbledon. It's like, you know what? Like, I don't think it hurts, Tom.
It's the first really big one after Wimbledon. So I think that the only one who, I think when we had Carl a couple of weeks ago, was that Victoria Azarenka may not be playing, but they're trying their best to get her, and she's a good bet to play as well. So pretty well everybody should be here.
It will be a great tournament. We'll be all over it. In fact, one of the aces will be broadcast right from the Tennis Canada facility. So we'll certainly enjoy that coming up in August. All right. Tom's mailbag is nice and full. We got lots of questions for Tom, as always, and thank you all for your questions. So we'll get to it right now. Tom Lyle emails in and says, guys, is it possible to win a major on the women's side these days without power? We have certainly seen the Williams sister take the power game to another level, Tom. Does everybody have to have power to win, though?
Well, just look at the Wimbledon final. Lisicki certainly has power. Bartoli, not quite as much, but she certainly hits the ball very well. It was funny. I was watching a bit of the girls' final. There's a girl named Belinda Bencic, who's coached actually by Martina Hingis's mother. And she is a promising player. She won the Wimbledon Junior Girls. So I think probably it is, but you're going to also have have some strength as well, because the women are just, you know, whacking the heck out of the ball, and you just can't sort of be submissive and have them taking it to you. You have to have something to give.
Got to have at least some power now to win. I would agree, Tom. You're right. Thank you, Lyle, for that question. Tyson emails in. Why hasn't Lisicki been able to translate her success on grass in recent years to other surfaces? Is it the inconsistency that's the problem? She's got a lot of potential, that girl.
Well, she does. There have been some injury things at various times. Maybe they came at times of the year when she should have been playing on hard courts or clay or whatever. The main thing is that you get such a reward on grass for hitting the ball hard. I mean, if you can really hit it hard, it hits the grass and skids low, and it's really hard to chase down. It's really hard to hit back. So the surface really is good for her game. And also, of course, she has probably the second best serve in the women's game next to Serena.
Yeah, that's a big factor in her game for sure. Thank you, Tyson. Charlotte emails in, regular emailer. Charlotte, nice to hear from you. I know her email starts. I know Del Potro won the U.S. Open final in 2009, but I thought the semifinal loss to Djokovic at Wimbledon might have been the best tennis I've seen Del Potro play. Seems to be moving better than ever, and I think it could be poised to join the Big Four or perhaps replace Federer in the Big Four. Agree or disagree? Charlotte, thanks. Good question. And by the way, Roger Federer ranked fifth in the latest rankings. First time in a decade. Is maybe Del Potro already in the top four?
Well, effectively, he might be, really. I think Ferrer's number three and Nadal's number four right now. Definitely, yeah, he's back. The only thing is, even laterally, after he had the wrist surgery and he lost most of a year about 3 years ago, he came back and played well, but now I think he's playing at another level, and really he could be ready. It'd be very interesting to see what he does if he's healthy through the summer, because he can just overpower anybody, And at 6'6", he moves remarkably well. So he's a well. Of course, we saw Janovic at Wimbledon too, 6'8", and he played really well too. So there's a lot of guys coming along. Hopefully, Milos can get on track as well.
New versions of Roscoe Tanner, the big booming guy back there, eh? With the power game.
Roger, that was before my time.
No, it's not before your time. You were going, oh yeah, I know that guy, and you said, oh yeah, I don't remember him. Yeah, you remember him. And by the way, there's a question coming up regarding. That's going to date us both here in a second. You'll get in a second. Mac emails in, says, Raj and Tom, listening again on fan590.com in Montreal. Mac, thank you for that. Two-part question for Tom. Part one, what does it say about the physicality of the sport of tennis in this era when a straight set grass court affair, men's final, takes 3 hours and 9 minutes to play? That was one long three-set match, wasn't it? And part B, will we see more injuries, shorter careers, given how physical this sport has become? Mac, they're great questions. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, it's amazing. They were talking, I was listening to some of the BBC broadcasts yesterday at Wimbledon, and they were saying about, you know, if anybody came back and the way Fred Perry played way back when, or the way that, you know, even Sampras and even Ivanišević played 15 years ago, they wouldn't believe how long the rallies last, because it's almost the same tennis you see on clay. So it's very, very tough on the guys. Whether there are going to be more injuries, I think it makes sense there would be, except for one thing. The guys are unbelievably careful now in terms of, you know, Andy Murray's taking ice baths after matches. Novak Djokovic is stretching 24 hours a day almost if he's standing waiting for a car somewhere at a tournament. Some guy's pulling his arm or pulling his leg. So hopefully those things combat that. But logically, you just can't push the body like it's pushed. And the way Djokovic hits some shots, almost doing the splits over on his ankle, sliding like a maniac, I don't know how much longer the body can take that.
Yeah, it might be a shorter career, but the physical, you're right about, you know, they're in, and they're, my God, they're in such phenomenal condition. Yeah, body fat on those guys. Like, I mean, honest to God. So, I mean, maybe the conditioning does do it, but 3 hours and 9 minutes for a three-set match on grass.
Well, 2 days earlier, he'd play four,
four
hours.
And a half.
Four hours, 43,
yeah.
I think. So, yeah,
it's crazy. Thanks again for that email. Goldine emails in and says, I notice in recent years that sometimes the All England club will stop play on some courts due to rain, and play will continue on other courts. In the past, though, if play was stopped on one court, play would be stopped on all courts. I don't get this. Is it possible to be raining on court 18 but not raining on number one court? Well, they have the one partial roof cover, but is that a factor at Wimbledon? What is the deal there?
Well, I think I noticed that happening a couple of times this year. But what happens sometimes is it can depend if you're at 5-4 in a set or something, and that court, hopefully somehow they'll try push things a little bit. It's a bit of a subjective thing with the umpires. Obviously, the supervisors and the referee can send out an edict, boom, that's it. But there's still, I think, a little bit of subjectivity left to the umpire. And like I said, if certain situations and matches, as long as the players will go along with it, I think they feel more comfortable trying to finish it off, especially if it's the end of the
season. Yeah, the timing of the match would have a factor in that. You're right about that. Good question, though. Thank you for that. Ahilan emails in, I feel Jeannie Bouchard has had opportunities to apply pressure on Navarro in her match at Wimbledon by coming to the net, but she was reluctant to do so. Does she need to venture forward more so she doesn't have to hit so close to the lines on her ground strokes, pardon me, particularly against good defensive players? And P.S., Ahilan feels that Bouchard will make a deep run at a major before Milos does. What do you think?
Well, that's a pretty outrageous prediction, but I mean, she did very well this year. Obviously, the third round of Wimbledon, she won that match against Ivanovic on center court when Azarenka couldn't play. She got the big stage and she performed very well. I think all the players are trying to get into the net, and even Li Na was talking about her coach when she lost her match to Radwanska. She's trying to get in a lot too, and Eugenie is 5'10". She can cover the net well. She's a pretty good volleyer, so I think she's going to try, but all these players nowadays, they get passed so easily sometimes, it can get kind of discouraging. But I think you got to do it. You got to challenge your opponent and say, get the ball by me. Here I am.
Yeah, some points you got to be aggressive for sure. We apologize to the emailers we couldn't get. Got one more before we play our mystery sounder. Here it comes from Jermaine, and this is a question I was talking to you about because it's for both of us. This question is for both you guys. As fans of the sport, who are your favorite male and female players growing up as kids? You see, they're trying to figure out how old we are. I'll go first. My favorite player was Rod Laver. I love the Rocket. I just love the way he played. Female side, Billie Jean King's the obvious answer, but I like Margaret Court. And you remember those Bobby Riggs matches that came up? Bobby Riggs just destroyed Margaret Court, and I felt so bad for her. And just like everybody else, I was so happy when Billie Jean King won the match. They were favorites. And I also liked Vitas Gerulaitis. I don't know why. He was just one of my favorites.
No, Gerulaitis was a fantastic player. I mean, all-around player, had a really beautiful game, was really fun to watch. Geez, I sort of came to tennis kind of late. I'm trying to think. I'll tell you, nobody's ever heard of him, right? Adriano Panatta is a player from Italy, won the French Open in 1976. Beautiful player.
Really?
Big, strong guy,
yeah.
Artistic strokes and all that sort of stuff. And I guess No, Adrián Panetta. Mm-hmm. He was a player. Matinee idol looks kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And apparently some of the Italian actresses late at night had visits from Adriano. Maybe a few too many visits because he didn't do as
wrecked
well as
his career. Yeah.
And Billie Jean, I think I'd go for her in the women because she was a beautiful player. We could go to the net. And so feisty. She was a great competitor.
Hard to argue with those. Thanks for all your emails. All right, keep that email address handy. Roger@sportsnet590.ca. Roger@sportsnet590.ca. Time for the mystery sounder. If you know the answer, email, you'll be entered for our draw for Rogers Cup tickets. And if you win the Rogers Cup tickets, you could win the Wilson tennis racket. And Tom is going to do this live right now with his fantastic state-of-the-art electronic equipment. Here is tonight's mystery sounder.
You know, my thought is, whenever you coach somebody, it's a blank canvas. You don't compare him to somebody. You try not to make him somebody else. You try to make him or her become the best player that they possibly can.
There you have it. Who is that mystery sounder? Roger@sportsnet590.ca. Oh, man, we are already getting replies. I thought that one might be a little tougher, but apparently not. Roger@sportsnet590.ca will announce your winner. Eileen Murray, congratulations to you. You win the tickets from last week's draw. Eileen, enjoy the Rogers Cup. We got 30 seconds. Wimbledon was as great as always, obviously, for you.
Well, it's a terrific tournament. I have to admit that I love Roger Federer. I like Nadal. And the middle Sunday, I used to go up and watch them practice. They weren't there the middle Sunday this year. They were just a little something different, missing.
Eh?
Little something missing.
Tom, great to see you. We'll be back on the 17th. Look forward to it, my friend.
Sure, Roger.
That's Tom Tebbett. I'm Roger Lajoie. Folks, thanks for listening to Aces on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're back again July the 17th. You know the answer to the sounder. Roger@sportsnet590.ca. We'll talk to you on the 17th and then four times in August. For Tom, I'm Roger Lajoie. It's Aces on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.